right, so today I have Rachel Leslie with me talking in my office, and we've talked a couple of times jokingly that we needed to do a podcast together, and she finally said yes. So I know a lot of people know you, Rachel, and a lot of people in the church, but for those of you who may not know you, tell us who you are, just tell us who you're married to and your kids and all that.
Sure. My name is Rachel Leslie. I'm married to Will Leslie. We have a big blended family of 5 kids, our ages from 11 down to almost 6.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Lots of fun.
So I asked a couple of people to kind of just give me, I said, give me one description, people that know you, give me one description of Rachel, just one word that describes her. And I've gotten the words enthusiastic, I've gotten the word passionate, someone said dedicated, and someone even said classy.
Aww.
Yeah.
You're trying to make me cry.
So, which I love, because when I think of you, those are the words that come to mind too. But the reason why I asked you is because everybody that sees you working in Awana or working in different ministries, VBS, and they just see you and they just see you're just fun and just fun loving and just super happy most of the time, 99.9% of the time. But what they probably don't know is that you have had an incredible story, an incredible journey. And it's not like you just woke up and you're just, everything's just so fun. So a lot of people that I know and people that I've read their biographies and people that I've watched, that have those amazing stories, those incredible stories, the good and the bad. I find that they fall into 2 different categories. One is the really bitter. I mean, and we can all think about that one person or several people that we know that they're just angry and bitter. And you think, okay, they must have some kind of story for them to be that way. Or the other category is just really happy, joyful people and just grateful people. And I find that you are part of category number 2, which is just full of joy.
Which I didn't always used to be.
Yeah. And so what I wanted you to do is kind of share with everybody kind of the bullet points journey that you've taken over the years. You're only 30, so
yeah.
You haven't lived that long.
No.
But I think it will surprise a lot of people to know that the happy, joyful, dedicated Rachel has really walked an incredible journey. So why don't you kind of just give us a brief testimony of that?
So my struggles have been countless, in no way unique, maybe the amount in such a short time frame, unique. Some of them self-inflicted, some of them because we live in a fallen, icky, nasty world. I've dealt with being abandoned as a newborn, and then being adopted, and then my adoptive parents divorcing when I was very young. A toxic relationship with my father, my own divorce, raising a special needs child while being a single parent, and still, and then remarriage, and with that, of course, came the fairly new struggle of parenting and dealing with those complicated relationships and emotions and hardships.
So I love that today we both sat through the same service, and we were talking about how it's really cool that Dave McManus was preaching in Galatians, and he was talking about, hey, anything that is awesome, that is good, that is amazing, is to further the gospel. It's to show the power of the cross or show the power of Christ. And I think when you give your testimony, when you share your testimony with people, it's not about, ooh, Rachel, the overcomer, or ooh, Rachel, this amazing mom. You know, everybody might think, oh, she's such a, how does she hold it all together? I've been to your house. Your house is clean. Your kids are fed. Like, how do you just, like, handle everything? But I love that your story is to boast about Christ and not about yourself.
No, I have nothing to boast about myself. Like, I did nothing. I just did what God told me to do. Like, that's the synopsis that I would say about my life, is that I did that. So I was saved at a very young age. I was baptized at the earliest age I could be in my church. I always have loved God. I wanted to be with Christ. However, my understanding and my role of where I belonged in that relationship changed after my divorce. I used to think my role was like, okay, God's there, but I still need to maintain control, and I need to be strong, and I need to do X, Y, and Z. And if I'm not doing those things, then I'm not in relationship with Christ, and that's not correct. While I was pregnant with our third child, my then-husband decided he no longer wanted to be in love with me. I had a very troublesome pregnancy, plagued with really bad preeclampsia, and then subsequently really bad postpartum depression. We had very little money. Times were really tight. My ex-husband couldn't keep a job. He was really struggling. I believe in his eyes, he truly believed that if he could just relinquish the burden of being a father and a husband or be with somebody else, he would be happy. And I think he sought it in every way he could, and it led him down a road, which we won't heavily discuss because we're at a really good place now. But our beautiful family was shattered, and all the things that I had done, all the lists that I had made, all the right choices in the church's eyes I'd made from the outside, we had it all together. For the inside, I was still a dirty, rotten sinner. So when our family was shattered, I took the opportunity to go to my mom's, and during that time, my ex-husband tried to file for divorce. Thankfully, God was working even then to protect me. I had $20 in my wallet, 3 children to feed, 0 work experience that would bring in a decent income. And to make matters worse, my then husband was asking for the custody of our children on the grounds that I was unfit from the postpartum depression. He wrote pages and pages full of lies that were submitted to the court of reasons I was unfit and that I would need to pay him child support. And I was broken. I was shattered. How could the person I love, the person I'd put all my stock into wrongly, mm-hmm. just walk out and then turn around and say such absolute lies? I'd given him everything. My love was misplaced. So back then I had a huge garden, and I was working in my garden and I was praying, just didn't know a direction. And God reminded me of the story of Hezekiah. And I say it was God because I'm very forgetful, and scripture seems to be the only thing I can remember. I can't remember passages or specifics, and I try and I struggle, but God brought forth the story of Hezekiah in my mind.
How long into this moment happen?
This was months into it, mm-hmm. of me praying and just getting nowhere, mm-hmm. like being scared, having no money, trying to carve out a life, trying to just do anything. So this was not, in time looking back, it wasn't very far into it, maybe a month. It was right after I'd gotten all of this pages, because court systems take time. So it was mm-hmm. right after I'd gotten all this stuff. It was really burdening me, like, and I was really angry at God, angry at myself, angry, bitter, nasty, mad, and just praying. And God said, think of Hezekiah. And if you haven't studied Hezekiah, you have to, because he's amazing. But one thing he does is he takes a letter he receives that's basically mocking God, and he takes it and he lays it out in front of God and is like, look, Lord, look what they're doing. Look what they're saying about you. And I knew that I was a child of God, and that God did not delight in someone spreading lies about their child of God. So I had a huge laundry room, and I just felt led to barricade myself in the laundry room. Kids crying out the door, you know, what are you doing? And I took all these papers, this stack of papers, and I spread them out on the floor. And I said,
the stack of the court papers
that had all the lies, all the things that he was demanding all this stuff. And I just said, okay, Lord, here's these papers. You see what's on them. I don't need to tell you. You already know. You already know that what's here. You know that you know the truth. And I know that you'll take care of it. I honestly said, I'm done living on my own terms. I'm done being in control. And whatever you say to do, I'll do. If the Holy Spirit that resides within me and your spirit that resides in with me says, do this, even if it sounds crazy, I'll do it. Because
I don't think people that might not know you well understand how momentous of a moment this was.
Yeah.
Because you are a self-proclaimed control freak.
I am the definition of anal retentive. Yeah. Like, I am the definition of, I have my lists and everything will be dress right dress, and you know, I will do this and I will do that, and I am in control. And at the time, I believed that I had control, and I now know that, sure, I might have had a hold of the steering wheel, but I, in my own strength, trying to have a hold of the steering wheel and trying to direct my life, I could not lead it where it needed to go. Like, anything that I was going to be the pilot of was going to lead to destruction.
So, and I'm sure you've had those moments again, even after that, where you've realized, oh, wait, I can't control anything that's happening. And I know, and we'll get to this in a little bit, but, you know, everybody, especially even now, have those moments where you get to what I call the brick wall of yourself, and you realize, I have no control, really, of anything that is happening. And I think that it was a huge turning point for you, wasn't it?
Relinquishing control was not something that before this I would have ever wanted to do or thought that I needed to do. I thought, I was like, well, I got this. I got my list. I got Jesus. He's there. I'm following the rules, but I got this. And so relinquishing control over everything and all of my pride and all of the...
We say, oh, you know, my pride, but that really cripples a person. Like, if that is something that I hate more than anything, is exposing weakness in myself.
It's the sneaky sin. I think that's what, in mere Christianity, that's what he calls it, is a sneaky sin. Mm. It's a sin that, for the most part, in the church, goes untalked about. Mm. Like, pride is not, cast your, you know, pride off. Well, what does that mean? Like, and when you face something, you have to arguably ask yourself, am I dealing with pride? Like, what's preventing me from doing what God's will is? And 90% of the time, it's pride standing in your way.
Right. And not just pride, like, oh, this is something that I'm thinking, but pride makes you do things that...
It'll rule you.
Will not only rule you, but ruin things. Yeah. You know, pride makes you sin. And, you know, we kind of brush on that and say, oh, stop being prideful. But the really hard thing about pride is that because you are so prideful, you are willing to sin to kind of make yourself either look better,
yep,
feel better, or it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to get in the way of truly letting Christ work.
And in doing that, truly getting in the way of your witness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because as we've talked before, if you have pride and you're trying to create this glossy image of perfect and everything's fine and I've got everything and look at how good I'm doing and, oh, I'm not as bad as that person over there, then you prevent yourself from reaching other people who are going through struggles that you've been through or have been through struggles that you yourself will go through. And you're isolating yourself. You're stonewalling yourself away from those people. You're preventing a relationship and therefore your helpline.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. And Pam Rico said this in her testimony when we were talking about women mentoring other women. And she said, you know, isolation is the tool of the devil that he uses, and especially in the circle of women.
Yes.
Because we get ourselves in a place where we think we can't open up. We can't really truly show what we're going through or what's really going on because we think, oh, nobody else is going to understand or empathize or they're going to judge me.
Yeah, there's so much judgment as a woman to be all these things and nail it perfectly. And society and other women, it's really hard to relinquish and say, you know what, I'm going to show everybody else that I don't have it all together.
Well, I think at this point you didn't really have a choice, because even if you wanted to kind of hide what was really going on, it's out there. Everybody knows that Rachel.
We lived in a small town, went to a small church. Everybody knew. Everybody knew. Everybody knew before I knew.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like I was the last to show up at the party, and everybody knew the elephant in the room, and they were like pitying me behind my back. Like, everybody knew. I just didn't know. Like,
for a prideful Rachel, I mean, that's just more crippling.
That was like ultimate devastation. Wow. Like, all the image I'd worked for is gone. Everything is gone. All of everything I've put my love into wrongfully is gone. And so it took the bottom of the barrel of realizing and knowing me, if you really know me, it must have been to take me all the way to, I am pond scum. You are my master. Where you say to go, I'll go. What you say to do, I'll do. Even if it makes me look absolutely ridiculous, I will tell that woman over there, I really like your hair. Even though I don't know her, and the shy Rachel that used to exist would say, don't say that. She's going to think you're a weirdo. What are you doing? Now I'm like, hey, I'm going to make a point because God says to do it. Okay, really, Lord? Really? Okay, fine. I'll do it.
Which is funny, because that's how everybody knows you around here is, oh, there's Rachel. Like, she just, well, just say, just talk to anybody. Yeah, there's no God. Stranger.
That's not me. That's God. And my husband's like, I don't understand. I'm like, I don't understand it either. I know I don't have to understand it to know that God says to do it, and I do it. He doesn't want women to be alone. He doesn't want them alone. The devil wants you alone and full of no hope.
Okay,
like, he wants to take that from you.
I really think that boils down to what you said is just obedience. Obedience brings fruit, and I think that's one of the fruit that has come of all this, is that people know you by your works. People know you by your spirit, and it's because you obeyed Christ.
Yeah, and I wish they wouldn't know me by my works as much as they... I wish I could tell people, because I'm not articulate, about the person I used to be.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing today, though, actually. Right? No.
And it's like, but it's not comfortable for me. Yes. So God's like, ahem. And I was like, if she asks again, Lord, fine. If she asks again.
Okay, so you got to the point where you were like, God, I've got nothing else but you.
Right.
And that's all I need.
And so a lot of things happened. I ended up getting custody of my kids. I ended up getting a wonderful job, paying more than I deserved. And a pretty compassionate employer. And I moved out of the house I was in, started renting my own house. And, God really made provisions each step of the way to make that happen. Now,
before
there's struggle all there.
Exactly. Before we just paint this beautiful picture.
It's not. It's messy.
I mean, you are just praying like that you have enough money to pay.
During this time, I'm broke. Like, we're not talking, oh, I can't go out to eat. We're talking Dave Ramsey, beans and rice. Like, that's our meal. We go into food pantries because I made just enough where I couldn't get any assistance. Just like, in fact, if I would have worked probably 10 hours less, I would have qualified. But I felt led like, no, that's not what you're supposed to do. Work with what I gave you. So I worked. And I worked full time. And we survived on the love and compassion of a Christian food bank. They didn't ask any questions. They were the sweetest people in the world. That's how my kids had birthday cakes. I mean, we're talking nothing extra at the store, no presents. We're talking, I mean, the poorest of poor, like, but God was there, and we had God, and so there was peace, and there was joy, and we didn't have two nickels to rub together, and there were times where it's, which bill do I pay? Do I pay, you know, I have to go to work, but my kid's sick. And there's, like, if I don't go to work, we don't eat. If I don't go to work, the electric bill. But every time, although we didn't have anything extra, because of our amazing, my amazing family and our church family and God-loving people, we were fed most of the time. The kids never went hungry. They never went hungry. I went hungry several times. And I remember my employer, and she wasn't the kindest lady, but God used her still. She'd say, I don't know how you can eat just that little.
Mm.
And I would think, I looked at her one day and I said, I don't have a choice.
Mm.
It's either I eat or they eat.
Mm.
And, but I knew that God was with me. I don't know how to explain it, but I knew that God was with me. I just kept, in my mind, like the lady who reached out just to touch Jesus's robe.
Mm.
In my mind, that's who came to my mind. I just needed to touch him. I just needed to cling. And if I cling to him, I just knew without a shadow of a doubt that he would not forsake me. Maybe we'd be a little hungry. I mean, maybe we'd go through some really tough times, but I would still have him. I would still have the thing that was filling me up. And I remember vividly, as we were sitting here talking, I remember vividly a lady I worked with who said to me, I don't understand why you are so full of joy when you have nothing to be thankful for. And I was like, it's free. You can have it too.
Wow.
You know, and she got saved. And she's a believer now. And had I not been in that struggle, would she have gone on in her own way? Like, I think about that. Like, God used me then, even though I was broke and without hope, in my mind, without hope, other than Christ.
Well, you know, and that brings me to this verse where in 2 Corinthians 12:9, where he talks about, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.
That's one of those verses that, what I did, and I looked like a crazy person, I'm sure, but we were broke, so we didn't have very much money, but I remember painting, like, these cheap canvases you can get at Walmart. They're like $5. And I painted them with chalkboard paint. And every week I'd pick out a new verse. Mm. A new verse that was laid on my heart. And I would write it out. And write it on my bathroom mirrors and Expo marker. I'd write it on the top of my hand. Put notes out. Reminding myself. And that's one of those verses was, my power is made whole through weakness. And it's like, I need to remember that. Like, and then, yeah, be still. Oftentimes we hear the be still, you know, mm. Be still and know that I am God. Well, still in that verse means quiet.
Mm.
And in my, so God in his loving patience with me, because he is very patient, long suffering, right? He says, Rachel, that means shut up and just do what I tell you to do. Just be quiet. Just be quiet. You can't fix it. So just shh. And I'm like, oh, Lord, I don't want, just, I got it. Just stop. You know, stop with your list. Stop with trying to fix it. Just
But on top of your husband walking out on your family, being a single mom of three, which is exhausting.
Oh, by the way. Absolutely exhausting.
I told my sister when she was a single mom, like, you're my hero. You go to work every single day and then you come home and you work some more.
Yeah, there is no rest.
Then you have, on top of that, you're finding out that your two-year-old son, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, there's just red flags everywhere. And
so I knew. I don't know if that, at that time, if my ex-husband knew, but I knew that there was something wrong, not wrong, something different about William and the way in which he was developing. And the first couple flags were at 2, but by 3, it was extremely noticeable. So William, I ended up having to fight doctors, because if you know anything about special needs parenting, if it's a moderate to high functioning child at that age, it's critical. It's extremely critical for early intervention, and it's extremely critical to have somebody recognize it. And through God, he brought it to my mind. Is actually a fellow, my old teacher who went to my church, pulled me aside and said, hey, William's different. And she was so kind and so sweet about it. And anyways, so ended up taking him to the neuropsychologist after struggling. I had to pay out of pocket because insurance wouldn't cover it, because during this time, all this is going on, it sounds all rosy. My ex-husband wasn't paying child support, on and off, cutting off insurance. I'd take him to the doctor. They wouldn't be covered. Next time it would be covered. Dealing with, he's remarried. That relationship is obviously embittered. Lots of emotions. You know, they're living in our old house. Like, lots of strong urges
to be angry about.
Lots of reasons to be very angry. And so during this time, William gets diagnosed that at the time, you can't be diagnosed with, typically you're not diagnosed with ADHD and autism before the age of 4. So they'll like to give it a few years of trying to figure it out, unless it's severe. Typically, if it's severe autism, you're going to know. So we fought to get him diagnosed. And finally at age 4, he was diagnosed. He's autistic. He's ADHD combined type. He also has sensory processing disorder, which means his senses are a little off. Meaning he doesn't act always normal. And right now, if you met William, he's 8 and he's a wonderful child. But then William was arguably a feral child. And I love my son because he is not that way now. But he could not speak. He could not hear, because we didn't know. He needed tubes in his ears. He couldn't hear. He did not meet any of the milestones that he was supposed to meet. And during this time, we're going to, finally broke down and went to the preschool in our area. Paid extra money to send him to a specialized preschool. God provided that. I still don't know how God made my money. All I know is I was faithful to tithe during this whole time. Faithful to tithe. And I will encourage anybody who's going through struggle who thinks, I can't do it on 100%. How am I supposed to do it 90%? God will work it. I don't know how, but he will work with more with your 90%, if you're obedient, than he will with your 100%. And he stretched my money. And we finally got him into this preschool, and they handed me this list, this stack of papers of all the ways William missed the mark. Mm. Like, all the ways. And that's, as a parent, again, you're going, really, Lord? It wasn't enough that my marriage was taken from me, and he's happy and married, and I'm not, and I'm alone, and I have no money, and no decent car, not a decent, you know, I loved my job, but not a decent job, not a long-term job. Really? And then he goes, and by the way, I'm going to need you to go back to school. What? I'm going to need you to go back to school for church ministries. I just need you to do that. Okay. Remember, you made a promise. Okay, Lord, I'll do it. And it was not an easy decision, but I went back to school. And so during this time, I'm going to school, dealing with William, and the challenges of learning to parent a special needs child. And
which I feel like could be a podcast all in itself.
And I don't feel like I'm super, there are so many more parents who have been handed a journey and a struggle harder than mine with William. God blessed us. God blessed us in the fact that William learned to talk. William learned to eventually read. William is still learning to write. And although he has his struggles, and it's not super apparent to probably the outsider, he has his struggles. God has been faithful in answering my prayers.
But I love what you say about God giving you William.
Oh, yeah. So, in our church where I'm from, and the church I grew up in, every Wednesday night is prayer night. And you go to the altar and you pray and you pray and you pray. And every Wednesday it's the same thing. You pray. Brief sermon, pray. Brief sermon, pray. And every Sunday I would go down, or every Wednesday I'd go down there and I'd just pray. And I'd go down, we lay hands on Sunday mornings, I'd go down for William. And I used to get so mad at God. Why, God, why? And I know some parents are saintly and they're like, oh, I've always accepted it. But not me. I was mad. Like, I was mad.
But when they say that, I always wonder, like, but did you really?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm like,
you didn't have those moments where you just question God.
Yeah. You question if they really did, but in my fallen control freak stage, what do you mean? And so, why God? Why? And his response, I firmly believe that he spoke to me and he said, Rachel, do you not see that you will fail to be the person I need you to be if you do not have William? It's not that William needs you. It's that you need William. And I was like, oh, I tell God all the time, listen, Lord, I'm stupid. You're going to have to make this. You're going to have to make this pointedly clear. You're going to have to. I'm going to have to lay the fleece out, not because I doubt you, Lord, but because I doubt myself. Like, I doubt that I'm hearing what you need me to hear and not my own self talking to myself. I need to know that this is you talking to me. And I have no doubt in my mind that he gave me William because he knew I wouldn't be the person I needed to be. And he's been right. Like, I adore William, and he's made me see the world from a completely different point of view. And that child, oh, to hear him pray and to understand that he knows God in a way that I desire to know God and to trust, he just fully trusts, faith of a child. I have other children, they do not have William's faith. William has faith. And
you know, take that even one step further, is that William is bringing you closer to God because you know that you can't do it on your own. And it just brings you to your knees more than probably anything else. And we'll get to the second part of your life story because it doesn't end there, but no. It makes me think of the verse. And I think of how many times have I missed this? How many times do other people miss this? Because we're just so stuck on seeing the small picture. But James 1:2 says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And if you look at things in your life where you question God and he reveals to you, like, this is going to make you to be more like me. This is to make you bring glory to me. Like, it completely changes those really, really hard days where you just want to give up.
Well, and learning when you feel like that to turn and make the choice, because it is a choice, to turn and look at God and pose. I don't believe God is offended in our weakness when we turn to him and we go, Lord, I don't understand that. What's going on here? Like, I thought you had ironed it out for me. I thought you had said... I'm confused. I need your grace. I need your mercy. Help me. I do not believe that God turns away from us and goes, yeah, I got more important things to do. But he will reassure you. He's a place of rest. He's your rest. And it's not easy to find joy in those moments. And, you know, that verse is just, for me, having gone through struggle, and people going through struggle, it's like, oh yeah, easy to say. What struggle? You know, oh, well, I'm not a saint. And it's making that choice to turn to his word, turn to godly people when you don't want to. Well, doing what you don't want to do in your sinful nature of going, yeah, but it's not fair. Why should I have to? This isn't fair. Yeah, I totally understand. You need to make a conscious choice to turn.
So, well, we're going to kind of move on to the second part of your life, because we haven't even met you there yet.
No.
So let's recap all of that and then go on to the next phase.